Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
All right, getting right into Overnight America. Thank you for joining us. Each and every weeknight, if you want to, you can like us on Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio. We post the podcast up, so if you want to listen to it on your phone, you prefer it that way. That way you can, I guess, fast forward. You know, you can actually rewind live radio with the radio.com app. We're on there, too. Just, you know, there's a lot of options, but 11:20 a.m. is always nice. It's comforting to know it's there. A few things I want to get to with Rich Rubino in the next segment. He's the author of American Politics on the Rocks. We'll talk about getting into the game late. We'll talk about celebrities doing politics and the Lincoln Project ads attacking President Trump. We'll also look at some of the violence over the weekend in St. Louis and then Governor Parsons signing a violent crime bill. What does that really mean? But I wanted to start the hour off giving you an update because I saw this in the radio trades. I read the different news that goes on between different radio stations, and it's kind of fascinating to think I'm in an industry where so many people pay attention to what other people are doing in other markets and other cities. Because, you know, it's entertainment and you can get some notoriety, some fame in some cases where there are famous radio disc jockeys and things. And I like to read up on what other people are doing. And there's a couple of different trade publications. And there was one that came out and they wrote an article about Rush Limbaugh's treatment update. So he started his show today saying, you know, thank you to all the guest hosts. He says he wishes he could do the show more often, just can't. It's just a difficult thing going through this treatment. It's very exhausting physically. He said that under the circumstances, he wouldn't really talk much about the treatment, but he said it's about due to give an update. And he used a baseball analogy. I don't know if he knew that Major League Baseball was going to actually put some sort of update today, a scheduling update, but he must have known it was happening soon because he talked about his time he worked with the Kansas City Royals. He says he understands a bit of baseball, and he wanted to give a baseball analogy of where he is with his health. And I thought, you know, I know there's a lot of people that listen to the show that love Rush Limbaugh and respect and know about his contributions, not only to radio, but really, in general, they just like what he has to say. They like his point of view, and they followed him for many years. Even here on KMOX, going back to, what was it, 93, maybe 94? Right around there. I mean, he's been on this radio station for many, many years. So I thought, yes, let's do this. Let's give an update from Rush Limbaugh from earlier today. This whole segment is a couple of minutes long. I'm not going to play the whole thing for you from his update from today. I just thought I would play the part where he gives an update on his status. So here's from today's Rush Limbaugh.
I thought the best way to update you and to inform you would be with a baseball analogy. And it was in late January that we learned of the diagnosis. And that means we learned of a really tough opponent. So it was time to go up to bat. Time to walk to the plate, bat in hand, and that is exactly what happened. And my first two at-bats were horrible. My first two at-bats struck out. Nothing to show for it. The first two attempts to deal with the cancer failed. One was a targeted therapy of clinical trial drugs, which worked but nearly killed me in the process. And so we had to get off of those. But it did, you know, that at-bat showed me I could hit pitch. I wasn't going to strike out. I was at least able to make contact. We had some hope that there would be a remedy. Second at bat, after we had to get off that, after the first, the second at bat was a total and complete failure. I struck out on three pitches, did not even make contact. So I'm now up in the bottom of the ninth. I'm 0-2. I have not reached first base. I didn't coax a walk out of anybody. I didn't get a hit, much less a double or a triple. But in my third at bat, the third attempt, I managed to get on base. I hit a solid single and then stole second. I'm currently on second base, hoping to slide into third and eventually make it all the way home. We're in the bottom of the ninth. If I get all the way home, we get extra innings. And that's what we're shooting for here. We're shooting, another reason why I chose baseball. Football and basketball have a clock in the end. Baseball doesn't. Baseball goes as long as the game is tied. Right now, I am tied. I need to round the bases and score. I need however it happens. I need either steal third. I need to steal home. Guy hitting behind me needs to come up with something. But that's what we're shooting for here is extra innings. And we want as many of them as we can get. Now, don't be alarmed by my direct mention of the first two at-bats being total failures. One of them was, well, they were both total failures, but one of them held promise. The current treatment regimen, and it's, folks, it's really tough because I know that you've known people or you've heard other people that are in media who are going through this illness or any other kind of illness. They're so eager to share with you good news that they do. And sometimes they get premature sharing the good news, and it isn't long. They have to come to, lost ground, or it's come back, or what have you. And so I am, and vowed to be, very guarded with the good news, because we're talking about cancer. There are good days, good weeks. There are bad days and bad weeks.
That was the update from Rush Limbaugh earlier today from the EIB network. Feels only right to do it that way. And just listening back to that, because I watched some of the video and I listened back to it just now as we're playing it on the show, you can hear in his voice something that shows you it is what he's going through and what he's doing right now is very taxing on his body, and obviously so. He's a very open person, but for him to come out and give an update like this, knowing that he is not going to give daily updates, means something. And we all hope and pray for the best for Rush. We hope that he gets his strength back. We hope that the treatment takes. We hope that not only can he get to third base, but hey, make it to extra innings and continue to fight this thing as long as he can. Our friend Rich Rubino is going to join us in a few moments, author of American Politics on the Rocks. What happens when someone gets into the game late in politics? We'll talk about celebrities in politics. We actually talk about Howard Stern in politics in this next one, too. This is an interesting one with Rich. I know you enjoy this. He joins us on Mondays. He's up next on Overnight America KMOX. He's the author of a book called American Politics on the Rocks. You can hear him Mondays here on Overnight America, and you can also check out some of his appearances online at politi-geek.com. Rich Rubino, thanks for coming on.
Glad to be on here again, Ryan.
Yeah, I know you have fans because I post a piece online on my Facebook page about an interview I did with Bob Costas. We're going back through KMOX memory lane. And the one comment I get, the first comment says, "Can't wait for Rich Rubino tonight." So that's good.
I hope I live up to the expectations then.
Well, I always enjoy these, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Kanye West deal from yesterday. So honestly, I really don't think this is a serious type of throwing your hat in the ring. I don't think he should be taken serious as a contender. I actually talked about this last night, and some people said they said the same thing about Trump at first, but this is so late into the 2020 election. I don't even know if he can get onto the ballot in a lot of these different states. I don't think there's even a real legitimate push for him other than him just making one or two sentences on Twitter and some people just letting their imaginations run wild. But really, I want to talk about celebrities when it comes to their impact on elections. And something else I want to talk about is sometimes there's candidates that get into the race late. And I want to know if there's any significant candidates that actually had a chance getting into a race late, maybe at some political office. But let's start with the celebrities first. Do you have anything comes to mind when it comes to celebrities and politicians?
Yes, remember Cooter from Dukes of Hazzard, the character Cooter. His real name was Ben Jones, and Ben Jones ran in Georgia for a congressional seat. The first time he ran, he got 47%, and he got a lot closer than anybody ever thought he would get. Then he ran again in 1988, and he actually won with 60% of the vote, so he was elected to the United States Congress. Then he ran again in 1990, was barely reelected. And he ran into, actually, he came back after losing re-election in 1992 after the district had been gerrymandered, and he ended up losing in the primary. So he came back in 1994 and actually ran against a fellow named Newt Gingrich.
Oh.
Now, Newt Gingrich was the House Minority Whip campaigning for other members of the Republican Party, so he wasn't spending much time in his district. So what Ben Jones did is he literally sent a bunch of bloodhounds out to where Newt Gingrich was, and he'd go around with these bloodhounds, and he'd say, "Does anybody here know where Newt Gingrich is? Does anyone here know what Newt Gingrich is?"
Uh-huh.
And so he'd go around basically trying to make the case that Newt Gingrich is spending all of his time campaigning for his own speakership and basically neglecting the district. He had a great ad where people would say, Newt, and then someone else would say, not. So he had this 30-second ads. So it was fascinating. He ended up garnering about 35% of the vote, which is actually pretty good considering he's running in the 6th District of Georgia, which is right around the Marietta area, Sandy Spring, Marietta area, some of the suburbs kind of going outside of the exurbs of Atlanta. It's actually a pretty tough district for Democrats, a very Republican district. So he outperformed expectations that year. And then he ended up coming and running again. He moved to Virginia, which was his original home state. He ran against Eric Cantor, who was another member of the leadership who became House Minority Leader. And he ran against him as a Democrat again and ended up losing. In the meantime, while he was kind of in that hiatus between running against Newt Gingrich and running against Eric Cantor, he runs against all the big guys in the Republican Party. He was an advocate for the impeachment of one of the few Democrats who advocated the impeachment of Bill Clinton, which is interesting because the 1992 Democratic primary, Ben Jones, along with Zell Miller, the governor of Georgia, and Sam Nunn, the senator from Georgia, all Democrats stood with Bill Clinton and endorsed him. And now Georgia was a pivotal state because Bill Clinton did not win in Iowa because Tom Harkin was a home state senator. Then he did not win in New Hampshire because Paul Tsongas was the neighboring senator from Massachusetts. So he called himself the comeback kid, thinking that, well, Paul Tsongas won because he's from the neighboring state. But Bill Clinton had to win somewhere. So he went down to Georgia and ended up winning. And Ben Jones' support was very critical at the time as he was an incumbent congressman. So that's somebody who I think was probably a very interesting celebrity that ran for political office.
Have any celebrities actually had success maybe out of nowhere? We know that there have been celebrities that have made it into office, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in California and then Jesse Ventura in Minnesota. But I think they actually put a campaign together. Has anyone ever just said, you know, I think I'll do this and then ended up winning in the office?
Not like that, no. I mean, you had Sonny Bono as another example, but he was a mayor of Palm Springs. In Jesse Ventura's case, a lot of people don't realize this, but he was mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. He did not just come out of the rank and say, "I'm going to run for governor." Hmm. At the time, that was the 6th most populated city in the state of Minnesota. If he was anybody else with those credentials, no one would have looked twice and said, "This guy's an experience." It was just the fact that people remembered him, not as mayor, but they had remembered him as somebody who was wrestling, at least nationally. People in the state of Minnesota, though, knew that he was somebody who actually did have political credence and actually did have political experience. That was a little bit different. Now, in Schwarzenegger's case, He, too, did have some political experience. He had run the President's Council on Physical Fitness under George H.W. Bush. And 2 years before, in the midterm elections in 2002, he was supportive of after-school programs. There was a ballot initiative that he successfully led. So Arnold Schwarzenegger also had political experience. But there's always people that don't have political experience whatsoever, like Gary Coleman, for example, in the race for California governor. There were all these other celebrities that just decided, well, why am I a guy? I might as well get myself into this race as well. Can you think of a better publicity stunt? You know, it's also another thing, by the way, sometimes people for lower offices will run just like, say somebody's an attorney, say someone's a local businessman, and they say, what's the best way to get free advertising? Well, maybe if I were to run for political office, then all the newspaper reporters are going to come in, they're going to interview me, and while they're interviewing me, they're going to say, what do you do? And you're going to say, well, I run this law office, or I run this business, and all of a sudden you're getting all this free advertising, not expecting actually to win, but it can actually benefit you in the final analysis. So there are all sorts of celebrities with kind of their own agendas. In terms of Kanye West, I mean, he's somebody that really does not have political experience in terms of ever running anything in terms of in the political sphere. I guess he does have, you know, he is somebody who's certainly been an advocate for certain positions. That's what the closest you can go. But I think what he's probably thinking, if he is thinking beyond just garnering publicity, he probably realizes that Americans do not vote generally on political experience. They generally vote on likability. They vote on whether somebody agrees with them or disagrees with them, where they stand on the culture wars. Anything is usually kind of secondary or tertiary in terms of anything about political experience. But in this case, I mean, his political experience is so low, I don't think that he will be taken seriously except for potentially some just disaffected voters who just want to kind of blow up the whole system that aren't disaffected with both Joe Biden and Donald Trump.
Kind of like in Michigan when Kid Rock said, oh, I think I'll run for Senate.
Oh, yeah, yes.
That's one of those deals.
Or Howard Stern.
Howard Stern ran for office. I didn't know that.
Here's what happened. Back in 1994, New York governor, you had Mario Cuomo was running for what would have been his fourth term as governor. He'd almost run for president in 92, didn't. George Pataki, a little-known state senator, was a Republican Party nominee. And then you had Howard Stern deciding he's going to run as a Libertarian Party nominee. And here's what he said he would do. He said he had two priorities and only focused on two things, then he would resign. He said the first thing he would do is he would restore the death penalty in New York. And the second thing he would do is he would disallow public employees from working on the roads during daytime, making them have to do during nighttime instead. And eventually, though, he dropped out of the race because he would have to, or if there were laws, he would have to release his financial disclosures, and he did not want to release that, so he basically dropped out of the race, and that was pretty much it for Howard Stern in his 1994 gubernatorial run.
Wow, and that would pretty much doom any broadcaster, and I know this just basically around election time. There's so many different FCC regulations that kick in, the amount of things you have to track. Equal time is an interesting one, too. So this is something that is brought up all the time. So let's say the local weatherman says, oh, I want to run for office. A lot of times you see the television station takes them off the air, or a local radio personality does the same thing. Oh, I want to run for office, and they take them off the air, and people wonder, oh, why would you do that? You have the opportunity to get so much free publicity and things like that. Well, the regulations are, it doesn't matter if what you're doing is politically based or not. You could be forecasting the weather and it has nothing to do with your office, or you could just be talking about music and it could have nothing to do with your office. Just the fact that you're a candidate that is running for office and you're declared and, you know, you filed and all of these things, it gives the opportunity for your opponent to request equal time on that station. Now, imagine if Howard Stern, being syndicated across the United States, if there was someone running for office, even though it was a New York office, someone could hypothetically request that time, and they would be able to take over a comparable airtime slot. So that is something that is a regulation I don't think a lot of people know. And a lot of times when broadcasters decide to run for office, that's why they have to go off the air.
It's fascinating too. If you go to on Fox News, remember Mike Huckabee? Now Mike Huckabee, a former governor of Arkansas. After he ran for president the first time in 2008, he had a show on Fox News, and he was a commentator on Fox News. He decided to run for president the second time in 2016, so obviously he was off Fox News because he had to do that, so he had to make some sort of a cost-benefit analysis. He would not be getting, the paid job in terms of having a job on Fox News if he was going to run full-time for president. Newt Gingrich is another example. Newt Gingrich runs for president. He cannot be a commentator on Fox News, which is interesting because there are rumblings, and there was an article in Politico this weekend, but the possibility that in 2024, Fox News' Tucker Carlson could run for president.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know if anyone's actually consulted him, but the argument is that he's kind of seen as the tribune of the Trump bloodline of the Republican Party. And by 2024, if Trump gets reelected or he does not get reelected, there will be somebody, there will be the part of the Republican establishment that will want to take the party back to where they were before Trump. And the argument is that Tucker Carlson will be the tribune of the Trump wing of the Republican Party. But if he were to do that, that means he no longer has that lucrative show or that platform on Fox News. Obviously, he's got plenty of time to think about that. But he's got, you know, he's breaking records with 4.2 million people on his Fox News show, and there's speculation, and there's some people that are saying that in Republican circles and Republican high command that this guy should run for president. But obviously, he has a you know, he certainly has to look in terms of his wallet, in terms of whether he would actually be willing to leave the show to do that.
Yeah, and I'd have to look into that a little bit more, because I always thought that there was different regulations when it came to cable. There's not really the FCC
okay.
per se regulation, but you also, because the same thing happened to Donald Trump when he ran for office, his show was on NBC, and essentially they would have to do the same thing. I mean, if Donald Trump's Apprentice was on an hour once a week, then they could have opened themselves up for that sort of liability. And the, I don't know, because like same thing with satellite radio, I don't know if there's any duty there. It might be an election duty more than a broadcast duty, but that's the thing about broadcasters. If you're running a radio station, you think, oh, please don't run for office, because then I'm going to have to fill your slot for a couple of months. What am I going to have to do? Rich Rubino, do you mind holding on? We could talk a little more after the break.
Sure, we can talk about your campaign for governor of Missouri when we get back.
I'm going to announce here with Rich Rubino coming up, author of American Politics on the Rocks. You can find him online, too, with his appearances. It's a good way to keep up with him, politi-geek.com, or do a search for him, which is on social media. Rich Rubino comes up next on KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. He's the author of American Politics on the Rocks, and also you can find his blog online. You can find him online, politi-geek.com. Rich Rubino, I'm not going to declare my candidacy for anything here tonight, so sorry.
I'm just trying to start to see if there was some news reporter that will somehow put it in a column and we can somehow percolate this.
You know, it makes me wonder. In some cases, you wonder if they do their due diligence, because they could actually listen to the segment and find out that this wasn't meant to be serious, a tongue-in-cheek type of, you know, fake announcement or whatever. But they might not actually listen to it or do any sort of research into it. Next thing you know, rumors are out there. I got a question for you.
Anyone's a journalist on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. And that's how things get spread real quick. People and journalists quoting random internet accounts to anonymous people, that's always dangerous. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this movement we've been seeing going on during the election here. And the Lincoln Project's an interesting one, because you see a lot of Republicans that are coming out forward, and some very traditional Republicans not happy with Donald Trump. And they're actually running ads against Donald Trump, who is the person that will be representing the Republicans in this upcoming election. I'm hoping you could talk about that.
Yeah, they're called the Lincoln Project, and basically they're a group of mostly Republicans who had supported, you know, John McCain, Mitt Romney, George W. Bush. Some go back to the Ford administration. A lot of them are people you've never heard of. They're part of the National Security High Command, something to that effect. Some you do see on TV, Steve Smith, for example, the Republican consultant who worked on John McCain's campaign, John Weaver, the former John McCain advisor who was very instrumental in getting Sarah Palin on the ticket that year. A lot of them have never really sought into the idea of Donald Trump. They never supported him, or if they did support him, it was kind of lukewarm. So they're not running ads. Basically, they're Republicans for Biden is essentially what they are. Yeah. And there was one ad they've shown that's gotten a lot of play, which showed Lindsey Graham, and it showed him back when he was running against Donald Trump in 2015 for the Republican nomination, basically saying Donald Trump's a xenophobe, Donald Trump's a fraud. And then you show pictures of him talking about Joe Biden, how Joe Biden is a wonderful human being. So they're running these in some showdown states and getting a lot of media attention. And so basically what they are is the Republicans are not necessarily they're for Biden as much as I think they're against Trump. But they would probably support whoever the kind of milquetoast Democratic candidate is, whether it's Joe Biden or whoever else it was. It's interesting because what they're basically making the argument is that we don't, and they even say this, and they're saying we don't agree with his positions on a lot of things, but we really do not believe that Donald Trump represents the Republican Party. So, you know, you go back in history, has there been examples when there's been members of one party that have organized against their own candidate and for their opponent? And actually, there kind of have. If you go back, 1972, actually. So John Connally, this is the guy that most people probably remember. He was a former Navy Secretary in the Kennedy administration, was elected governor of Texas in 1962. He was with John F. Kennedy when he was assassinated. He was in the back, and he was, because he was the incumbent governor of Texas, who was kind of, you know, the host to governor, to us, to President Kennedy. So he's remembered for that. Then he landed up, becoming a Treasury Secretary. Richard Nixon had chosen, even though he was a Democrat. So in 1972, he headed up Democrats for Nixon. And the Democrats for Nixon were a committee of basically Democrats, a lot of establishment Democrats who believed that George McGovern, the senator from South Dakota, was too far to the left for the Democratic Party and for the country. A lot, some Democrats running for public office in places like Texas, where George McGovern was extremely unpopular, we garnered less than 40% of the vote, signed on to this Democrats for Nixon group so they could say that we're not really with our party's nominee. So you have had this, certainly had examples of this in the past. You know, Mayor Collins, for example, of Boston, some urban ethnic Democrats who were kind of disassociated with George McGovern. But what I think is interesting is in terms of in 1964, if you go back to 1964, Barry Goldwater, the senator from Arizona, who said in his speech at the Cow Palace in San Francisco that year, he said, extremism in defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. And with that, in part, he turned off a lot of people in the mainstream of the Republican Party and a lot of Democrats who might potentially vote Republican. So what candidates like George Romney did, for example, who's running for re-election as governor of Michigan, is knowing that Barry Goldwater is going to go down in flames in his state, he actually sent out thousands and thousands of pamphlets to voters showing how you can vote for Johnson on the presidential level and vote for him as a gubernatorial candidate. Now, he's a Republican, and Johnson and Humphrey are the Democratic candidates, but he's showing you how to crossover vote. Another one was Kenneth Keating that year in New York State. Robert Kennedy that year was running against Kenneth Keating. Kenneth Keating was the incumbent Republican senator, kind of a liberal Republican, and one of his slogans was essentially vote Johnson Humphrey and then vote to keep Keating, meaning you vote essentially, you split your ticket, you vote for the national, at the national level, you vote for Democrat, you vote for the Democrat, then you vote for me. In Keating's case, he landed up losing, and in Romney's case, he landed up winning. By the way, Keating had a great line on that campaign, because as an aside, so Robert Kennedy had basically been seen as a carpetbagger from New York to the point that on election day, he literally could not vote for himself because he was not a New York citizen. He had been in Washington. He had been in Massachusetts. He spent most of his time growing up somewhere in Massachusetts, sometime in New York. So what Keating did is he got up there when he announced his candidacy for Senate, when he announced he was running for re-election to try to show that Robert F. Kennedy was a carpetbagger. He said, I just want to make an announcement I think you all need to hear right now. And he says, I will not be a candidate for the United States Senate in the state of Massachusetts. which was, of course, Robert Kennedy's state.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a couple of things I want to get to while we have just a few more minutes. And I wanted to get an update on the presidential race, because that is still going on. You see more ads out there as of late, and not all digital. And, you know, things are starting to heat up, too. There's some congressional races that you start to see people are campaigning for in regions and localities. But looking at this presidential race, I don't know if we're any closer to figuring out who Joe Biden's going to pick as his running mate. It's getting a little bit late in the season, it feels like, and he's just now starting to make some appearances. So he's been doing a lot of things from home, but just as of late came out. And I'm wondering if you've seen any changes, because it seems like there hasn't been much in the way of public perception or changes lately when it comes to this election.
No, not really. I mean, what Joe Biden is doing is really kind of is really beneficial for him, actually. What he's essentially doing is he's staying home in Delaware, and he's doing a lot of local interviews with some reporters in swing states that aren't getting a lot of national attention. And I think his essential strategy, in part because the governor of Delaware had ordered a stay home order, so he has an excuse to say, well, I'm not going to go out and campaign. The few appearances he's done have been essentially in Pennsylvania, which is close, and certainly you can drive from Delaware to Pennsylvania. But he doesn't necessarily, you know, go on an airplane to make a litany of appearances in Wisconsin, for example. But it's actually benefited him. And I think what he's trying to do is essentially he's trying to be the anti-Trump. He knows as Donald Trump's job approval rating sours that people are going to be looking for an alternative candidate. And if you're looking for an alternative candidate, what they're looking for, first of all, is that you don't necessarily be somebody who's going to self-implode. And the fact that Joe Biden has not been out there that much has actually benefited him. Now, that being said, obviously, as you get closer and closer to the election, he's going to do a lot more appearances, and he has the possibility to make a lot of gaffes, and he's called himself, you know, a gaffe machine. So it is interesting in terms of what potentially could happen between now and election time. In terms of the vice presidential search, he said early August is when he's going to choose somebody, and people really have no idea what he's looking at right now. There are so many potential candidates. I mean, you have kind of the establishment people, candidates that people would normally look at. You know, you have someone like Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire, for example. But then you have other candidates, like, for example, Val Demings. His name is all over the media. She's a congresswoman, former 27-year member of the police force in Orlando, former police chief of Orlando. But she was just elected United States Congress in Orlando in 2016. So the question is, would Joe Biden, somebody who's 10 points ahead right now in the popular vote, winning in pretty much every swing state, just about every swing state, would they take a risk on somebody whose only elective experience is in one out of 435 voting congressional districts? Would Joe Biden do that, or would he potentially go with somebody who's more safe, it's just interesting in terms of, we don't know where he's going to pick. Another name to keep hearing, by the way, is Susan Rice. Would he potentially choose Susan Rice? Now, Susan Rice is the former UN ambassador, and he's somebody who he has very good chemistry with personally, and they're very simpatico ideologically, but she's someone that's very kind of, in many respects, kind of complements Joe Biden, because she's known in terms of a foreign policy aficionado, not somebody who's seen on the domestic scene. And the other question is, if he does bring her up, he risks the possibility, because she was the person who, after Benghazi, who had gone on television and said that the uprising in Benghazi, Libya, was because of a video, and then it was later found out that it was essentially a terrorist attack on the embassy. But, you know, Joe Biden will, if she is a nominee, Joe Biden will essentially say that, you know, that's the information she was fed. But just the fact that he would actually bring up Benghazi again would show how much confidence Joe Biden has in her, that he's willing to take that risk. But we really don't know what potentially he could choose. I keep thinking, you know, I've said Hilda Solis was one that I kept thinking of, the former labor secretary. But another one I'm thinking of, just because health care is such a flagship issue right now, I keep wondering about Kathleen Sebelius. She was the former governor of Kansas, and then she became HHS director in the Obama administration. She had some problems, certainly, with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, but she's somebody that I would certainly watch as kind of a backbench candidate. But we have no idea, and Joe Biden could potentially surprise everybody. And I think if he were to say, you know, if Michelle Obama were somehow to agree, that would be a political coup de force. But I don't know if she's actually going to agree. But imagine if they're actually kind of keeping that in the background and having all this speculation. All of a sudden he comes out and Michelle Obama appears and everyone says, wow.
It would be like WWE wrestling when a wrestler comes back from like an injury and they don't think he's going to make an appearance at the Royal Rumble. And next thing you know, boom, they play the theme music. The person comes out, the place goes crazy.
And all of a sudden she comes out. I just wonder if there have been, maybe this thing's all a sham and they're just waiting for, and they have it all planned and everyone's in on this. But I don't think so. I think that Biden would want her to be on the ticket, but I just don't know if she would actually accept it. But, you know, as I say, there's always that kind of slim possibility. I think a lot of people in the Democratic Party are certainly hoping for that.
Yeah, we might have to come up with like the theme music for each political candidate, their walk-up music. But the thing on wrestling is they play the shattered glass and Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out. There would have to be some sort of trademark sound for any of the politicians as they walk down to an audience going crazy. So if you're online, people can look you up. What's the best place if they wanted to find you, or what should they do?
Yep, just go to Facebook and type in Rich Rubino, Rubino, and you can see all my appearances there, or go to Rich Rubino Paul on Twitter, or go to www.polita-geek.com, and you can see my appearances there as well.
I very much enjoy doing these with Rich Rubino, Mondays on Overnight America. Rich, thank you for coming on.
You're quite welcome. Thank you so much for having me on again, Ryan.
And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line on Overnight America, KMOX. Rich Rubino, he's so good. Let me read you something real quick that happened on the Ryan Recker Radio Facebook page from earlier today. And this pretty much sums up Rich Rubino and how much people actually enjoy him and love him. So on the Ryan Recker Radio Facebook page, I posted a link to a hour I did with Bob Costas last month. It was an hour talking about KMOX memories, history, him and the colleagues he worked with. There are some pretty remarkable KMOX stories that were shared. This is after we debuted the Robert Hyland radio documentary. And my first comment I got on that post, Bob Costas shares KMOX memories. First comment was from David, who said, I look forward to listening to Rich Rubino tonight. That was his first comment. You know, we're talking about broadcast legend, world-class sports talent, Bob Costas. And the first comment I get is about Rich Rubino. Just as fitting, isn't that saying a lot about social media? So I wanted to just cover a few things here. We have a few minutes before we get to the news, not only from CBS, but also the top of the hour news locally here in St. Louis. Brad Young from Harris, Dahl, Fisher & Young will give us an update and break down the latest Supreme Court judgment and what could be happening next from the Supreme Court. I wanted to just point out one of the major issues that the city of St. Louis has been trying to grapple with for the, last six decades? It's an issue that St. Louis has this reputation of being a dangerous city, and they're not doing themselves any favors when this happens over and over and over again, and there's really no cure to the violence that we see on the city streets. The population continues to move out to the suburbs. We see less and less people living in the city, but the crime rate stays steady over the years. You can go back 10 years when the population was larger, 20 years, and you can see similar crime rates. And it's very, very sad when we make so much noise and we draw so much attention to these areas that really don't fix the root cause of the issues that we face. Over the 4th of July weekend, 7 people were killed, 17 others shot. One story happened in the streets in St. Louis City. A 4-year-old boy was struck in the head by a stray bullet outside of Page on Saturday. A stray bullet. Grandma was inside from what I saw in the article. Heard pop, 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 pop. They thought, oh, I guess someone is shooting off fireworks. I thought they were done with fireworks on the 4th of July. Police originally put out that the 4-year-old died from his injuries, but then later revised that and said is in grave condition. 4-year-old. You know how many minors have been shot in the city of St. Louis this year? Of course you don't. Of course you don't. It's too high. It's way too high. You know what we're doing instead? Let's talk about ripping St. Louis statue down in front of the art museum, because that really is the most important thing that we are dealing with in the city of St. Louis. It's so sickening that we don't pay attention to the number one issue that the city of St. Louis faces year in and year out. This is the root cause of so many of our problems. But what are we doing? What are we wasting our time on? It's all wasted time. Governor Parson signed a violent crime bill, which is good, but maybe you can sign a bill that forces prosecution to not take these violent criminals lightly, so they actually have to take their job seriously and try to move the ball forward to get them off the streets. That could be a good step. We'll have to talk about that bill later. I ran out of time. But Brad Young from Harris, Dahl, Fisher & Young is going to join us in just a couple of minutes after the news on the latest Supreme Court judgment. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.